Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tux Lurzel.
This is Stephanie Domingo.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we would like to acknowledge that.
Show enough.
This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government. We be drinking and we be swearing.
We sure fucking do.
Yes. So today we are drinking a cocktail called the Ward 8. It is, it was very popular in the 1940s, which is the era of Stephanie's story today.
Yes.
It was not originally invented in the 40s, but it was really popular in the 40s.
Okay.
We have talked before on the show about how a lot of times cocktail origin stories can be really hard to nail down. You know,
because people be lying
and people be drunk and people be making shit up. Yeah. So
that deathbed shit, I still think about it. Yeah. It's so absurd.
Yeah.
That's clearly not what happened.
No. And then it's like, or maybe he just got it from the people who owned the bar before him.
Or, yes.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's clearly the like deathbed stranger.
It's so absurd.
Yeah. But yeah, people are drunk, and sometimes these cocktails are created so long ago that like stuff gets just lost to history, and then people fill in the blanks and make shit up. This is not one of those cocktails.
Oh, okay.
This is one where we actually know like exactly when and exactly where this was made.
How rare.
Yeah. So the Ward 8 is one of the most popular cocktails, if not the most popular cocktail ever invented in Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow. Okay. Yes. So you did mention that there was a cocktail from Boston that you wanted to do and that you kept almost doing. This is perfect for the scandal.
This cocktail was created in Boston at the Loch Ober restaurant in 1898. It was created as part of a celebration for the election victory of a man named Martin M. Lemazny, who was elected to the state legislature. He was a politician in Boston with considerable power for 40 years. He was a state senator and state representative. He was also a political boss in the city's 8th ward.
Mm.
Some people say they like to point out the fact that it was a little bit odd that Lemazny was so sure that he was going to win the election that he had his election party the day before the election.
That's and had a this bold
bar, yes,
move.
He had this bar create this cocktail just for his victory.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure. Sounds like funny business.
Yes. He had a brand new cocktail invented just to celebrate his victory in 1898. So there's a little bit of rumor and conjecture that he may have fixed the election somehow. I don't know. I feel like if you are going to have an election party on election night or maybe the day before, and you want to have sort of like a signature cocktail, you're not going to like wait until the results are called before like, and then run to the bar and be like, oh, can you think up a cocktail real quick just for me?
Yeah.
But also like he could have just waited until the day after the election, but no, he was so sure he was going to win. He did it the day before the election at the Loch Ober restaurant.
I mean, if he was in office for a really long time, it is kind of a foregone conclusion sometimes.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if there was something foul afoot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it could just be
because it was Boston.
Exactly. He was a political boss
in
Boston in the 8th Ward. So, yeah. So we're drinking the Ward 8 because he was the political boss in the 8th Ward. It's essentially just a riff on a whiskey sour, a rye whiskey sour. You just sub out some of the lemon juice for orange juice and you swap out the simple syrup for grenadine. There is no egg white in this version,
though. I was just about to say.
Yeah. A lot of people don't put egg white in a whiskey sour, though. But other than the missing egg white, really, it's just you've swapped the simple syrup for grenadine. And some of the...
That
some
sounds
of
delicious.
The lemon. Yeah. I just want to make note here that for flavor, you want to make sure that you're using a real pomegranate
grace
grenadine.
Don't use the red stuff.
No, the neon red stuff. It will make for a prettier cocktail, but it will also make for just one that is syrupy sweet and doesn't taste like anything but sugar. Whereas the real pomegranate grenadine tastes delicious, but is a little muddy in color.
Yeah.
So let's take a taste. Let's
take a little cheersy cheers. Yeah.
Cheers. Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
I like that there's a straw, and yet I still tilted the glass, and now there's a delicious cocktail in my in my lap.
Oh, man, it's so
good. Holy shit. What? Wait, okay. This is whiskey.
Rye whiskey.
Orange juice.
It's
and
2 ounces, 2 ounces of rye whiskey and half an ounce each.
Oh, this is delicious.
Grenadine, lemon juice, and orange juice.
It's so bright.
It's really simple to make, too. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, cheers. So we do know when and where and why this cocktail was created. The one thing, though, when the Ward 8 was invented, they didn't think to actually write the recipe down. They told us all about why it was happening and who was involved and where it happened. But they didn't write the recipe down. So there are some different variations if you're looking for a recipe for this. The most popular one, the one that I've seen the most, is the one that we're drinking today that has orange juice, lemon juice, and grenadine. Some recipes leave out the orange juice, and it's just rye, lemon juice, and grenadine with no orange. Most of them do have both, though. So this cocktail, you know, like I said, it was invented in 1898. But after that, it really blew up, especially in Boston. It kind of took off. But then by the 1940s, it was popular nationwide. Everyone was loving it. Stephanie's story, as I mentioned, is from the 40s. So it's perfect for today.
I mean, my story starts earlier.
Well, the cocktail did, too.
So. Yeah. The tragedy is in the 40s.
Okay. By the 40s, it was so popular that I actually found, I don't know exactly what this is from. Supposedly, this is from 1946. I think it's like a drink menu from a restaurant.
Hmm.
But this is like, it would tell you all the cocktails you could choose from. And the Ward 8 is the very top.
Oh, cute. Yeah.
We'll put this on our Instagram.
Wow.
It looks significantly more red in this picture because they were using the
very
neon.
Red.
Yeah. So as for serving this cocktail, most modern bartenders strain this and serve it straight up into a chilled coupe glass or martini glass or cocktail glass. But when it was first invented, it would have been served over ice in a tall glass, like a beer glass or a Collins glass. And by the 40s, it was still being served in a tall glass with ice. So that's how we were drinking it.
It's delicious.
Yeah, in the way they would have done in the 40s.
It's really, really nice, you guys. And it's so simple, too.
It's really simple to make, yeah. Two fruit juices, grenadine, and whiskey.
Yeah, this is the one everyone needs to try.
Yeah.
So this episode, I wanted to give myself and the listeners a bit of a break from all of the sadness that I've done recently, a break from the terrorist training camps and indigenous genocide. I thought we all could use a nice New England vacation.
Ooh.
Little holiday in Brookline, Mass.
Ah. I was feeling that vibe too. For December, I was like, you know, we need to cool it.
I need to tone it down.
The deep stuff.
This is not sustainable.
Yeah.
I'm going a little too hard in the paint. And yeah, I thought it would be nice to check in on some rich white folks and see what they've been up to, because odds are it involves mess.
Uh-huh. And, oh, look at that. Just like Governor Morris.
Yes.
Rich white messy people.
Our stories are very, they're not the same, but like, there are some themes that are similar.
Can't wait.
So
pull up a cocktail.
You know who I'm talking about?
No.
Brookline, Mass. Does that not ring any bells?
I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I don't want to make a fool of myself if I'm guessing wrong.
My story today involves the Kennedys.
Okay, of course it's the Kennedys.
Yes.
I was going to say the Kennedys, but then I was like, if you're going to talk about someone else, I'm going to feel foolish.
Yeah. So prior to researching this story, I did not know a ton about the Kennedys. I know that they were billed as like an American royal family prior to Beyonce and Jay. They were sold to us as that. I knew that Ted Kennedy killed a young woman with his car. And I know nothing about it because I don't care about rich white men. It's not part of my ministry. I know about JFK, obviously. Great airport.
Yes.
I forgive it for being in Queens. Have you seen that Overheard New York about the two women talking about? So if you don't know, there's this, it started as a blog, Overheard New York, where anonymous people could just send in just weird things that they heard New Yorkers say.
Yeah.
And they have it on Instagram, and it's so funny. Recently, I saw it was a conversation between two women, and then one woman says, she's weirdly obsessed with JFK. And the other's like, the airport? And I'm like, this is so Gen Z.
Yeah, totally.
that's their reference? The airport? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I love that's you guys so funny. in your young knees. I just, I can't get enough.
Functional knees. How dare you?
When my mother used to complain about her knees and her joints, I thought she was just making no sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, why would your knees hurt?
Yeah.
You're not doing anything.
I don't understand.
You're not a basketball player.
Yeah.
I don't get it. So obviously I know about JFK. I've done a few stories about him, or at least a few scandals that involve him. I know that he was a product of wealth and influence despite being a Catholic.
The horror.
Yes. His father, Joe Kennedy Sr., he was the son of a politician, you know, nepotism, etc. He made his fortune, or he made additional fortune, during the stock market crash of 1929.
Oh.
Because insider trading was not yet illegal.
Yeah.
Everyone was doing it. Yeah. Like, he pulled all of his money right out of the stock market before it crashed and put it into real estate.
Oh,
and the rest is history.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I guess if it's not insider trading, it's opium dealing. So you got to.
Yeah.
These
pick your
political
poison.
Families got to make their money somewhere.
Exactly. And it's always not on the up and up.
Yeah.
So he married the mayor of Boston's eldest daughter. Her name was Rose Fitzgerald, I guess the Rose Kennedy of the cocktail. She was a famous socialite, and she did a little bit of charity. She was a rich, young white girl, living her best life, and I'm not mad at it. Her and Joe Sr., they had 9 children.
Okay, that I'm mad at.
Same.
Poor woman.
9 children, 3 of whom went into politics. And I'm not interested in the 3 who went into politics. Not interested in these men. My scandal today is the life and times of Rosemary Kennedy.
Oh, wow.
The sibling who was sacrificed to make their political careers possible.
Oh, I do know the story, or at least a part of it. I know something about this.
Yeah. I didn't know this story, but I think a lot of people who care about rich white people know about this story. It was news to me, and I was like shocked by everything that unfolded.
So you're not going to be talking about how JFK Jr. is still alive and working to help Trump win the next election?
I might do a mini about that. I need to do my own research.
Yes.
I need to do some more of my own research, but I smell what you're stepping in, and possibly.
Oh, no.
But first, a toast. Let us raise our glasses to bodily autonomy and the joys of being a woman.
Yes. Sounds like so much fun.
It's real fun, you guys, as the women know.
Mm-hmm. Especially, well, the 40s or earlier.
Yeah, 40s, 20s, yeah. 40s. Yeah.
It must have been so much fun to be a woman.
It was the best.
Yeah.
It was a really good time, as you all will learn.
If you want to experience it firsthand, you can move to Texas. In
Oh, my God. So on September 18th, Rose went into labor with her 3rd child. Her OB was called, but he was running very late. It was the middle of a pandemic.
Oh,
this is 1918.
Yes, the Spanish flu.
Yes. The city of Boston was being rocked by the flu, and just all of the doctors, it was all hands on deck.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever type of medical professional you were just trying to help.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was running really late. Mm. And I don't know if you know anything about OBGYNs, because why would you?
No.
They are notoriously late.
Oh, okay.
I know this because my dad is one, and
they're on OBGYN time.
Yes. Well, they're late because fetuses are disrespectful.
Sure, yeah. They don't run on schedule.
They will be in utero, 2 sharp-ass middle fingers up to your time, to your schedule, to your life, really.
Yeah.
They come whenever.
Yeah, when they feel like it.
When they feel like it. And they're just, really disrespectful. And I just want to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
So in place of the doctor, there was a nurse who was with Rose at the time.
Okay.
And she was very determined to stopping the pregnancy. She wanted to wait for the doctor to arrive.
Okay.
For whatever reason, this is what she wanted to do, and I don't really get it. So she started by first holding Rose's legs together.
Okay.
That was her first strategy, and it failed.
So this is a medical professional.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe she did her own research.
Yes.
I need to stop saying that, but like, yeah, she's a medical... There's a lot of negative things that people say about this nurse, and I'm going to get into this in a second.
Okay.
But she had her own sort of strategy for things, and it was not the best.
I mean, it was 100 years ago. So
yes,
I guess,
exactly. It was 100 years ago. However, even back then, trying to stop labor was a no-no.
Yeah.
They knew back then that this was a bad idea. So when holding Rose's legs together failed, because it was too uncomfortable and just she couldn't do it, she reached in to Rose and held the baby's head in the birth canal.
Excuse me?
She put her hand up Rose and held the baby in place. Guess for how long?
Oh my good Lord, I don't want to know.
2 hours.
What? 2 hours.
2 hours. So a lot of my information came from excerpts from a book by Kate Clifford Lawson. The book is called Rosemary, the Hidden Kennedy Daughter. She wrote that it was well understood that preventing the movement of the baby through the birth canal could cause a lack of oxygen, exposing the baby to possible brain damage and physical disability, which is exactly what happened. It's hard to know why the nurse did what she did. There's a lot of negative feelings towards this nurse online and just everywhere.
I mean, I'm having negative feelings towards this nurse right now.
Yeah, but 100 years ago, the majority of nurses were female. Uh-huh. And all of the doctors at the time, there wasn't a female doctor until I think the late 40s, I think 49. So all of the doctors were men.
Sure.
And the role of the nurse was to be support to the doctor, support the patient.
So she thought, like, I can't let this baby come. I have to wait for the doctor to get
here. I blame sexism and capitalism because if the doctor wasn't present at the birth, the patient wouldn't be charged the birthing fee.
Oh, my God.
So it would be $0 for both of them.
Oh, my God. But literally 2 hours.
When you could have just easily caught the baby in a sterile...
You could have fucking pulled it out with your hand at that point.
It would have fell on the floor if she moved her hand from Rose. Like, it's...
Can you imagine...
She had the skills to catch a baby. Anyone can catch a baby.
Can you imagine being Rose Kennedy with a woman's hand up your vagina for two hours?
2 hours. As the contractions are coming and you're feeling nothing but pain.
Get your fucking arm out of my vagina and let me have this goddamn baby.
So the doctor finally arrived and Rose gave birth to her first daughter, who she would name after herself. Rose Marie was the baby's name, but her nickname was Rose Mary or Rosie, the family called her. She looked just like her mother, and she acted as a newborn, just like her siblings. She was, you know, a cooing baby girl. However, she struggled to hit many developmental milestones. Like it was hard for her to crawl, took her a longer time to walk. She had trouble with just motor coordination. It was hard for her to eat.
Yeah.
To use utensils to eat. So Rose noticed that her daughter, Rosemary, couldn't keep up with her two elder brothers.
Mm-hmm.
The brothers who weren't held in her cervix for 2 hours.
My fucking God.
But she was occupied spitting out babies.
Yeah.
Because at this point, she still had a whole Domingo family to go.
Yeah.
So
you got six more on the way.
Yeah, more on the way. So school, when Rosemary started to go to school, it was no different. She really struggled academically. She was probably dyslexic, amongst other things. It's really hard to classify developmental disabilities, especially back then. It didn't exist. And even today, it's really hard to classify, especially in this country, because of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know anything about dyslexia. It's very class-based.
Okay.
If you are like ESL or you're like black or brown, if you're struggling with reading and writing, you are just told that you're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are affluent or middle class, you are given modifications. Like they want to help you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not just a U.S. problem. It's in the U.K. as well. And the reason I know about this is because I listen to The Guardian has a podcast. They read their paper called Long Reads.
Okay.
So every week they read a long read from the paper. And in the U.K., they have a very similar problem. And they described the parents of dyslexic kids as middle-class parents with sharp elbows. Which is like totally just like my kid needs this.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the 20s, there was no system in place yet for making educational accommodations for the children of wealthy, you know, affluent parents.
Okay.
Like there is today. So her mother, fearing that her kid was going to be teased, because at this point, Rosemary had been held back twice.
Oh.
And either she was in class with one of her younger sisters, or she was about to be in class with one of her younger sisters.
Okay.
So they pulled her out of school and began homeschooling her.
Okay.
They hired two private tutors to teach her. So if you're wondering where Joe Sr. was, don't. He was busy with his affairs, and I don't mean business. Watching her brothers and sisters go out, like run around and play, she just wasn't able to keep up.
Yeah.
And she was really frustrated, super angry about this. I read differing accounts of her behavior, but they described violent fits.
Okay.
That she was having, because maybe she was confused, or maybe she just felt like she was being left out.
Yeah.
That's what her mother thought.
That makes sense.
I totally get that. But there is speculation that she had seizures.
Oh, okay.
That were related to the brain damage that she got when she was deprived of oxygen for so long during her birth. But there are other accounts that said that she was just a child who was pushing back against a really strict mother. Her mother was very Catholic and very just rule-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get into this later, but she wasn't allowed to leave the house without a chaperone, essentially.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas the other kids were running around. So sure. It could have been just her violent mood swings might have just been tantrums, you know?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Or it could be both. She could have had seizures and tantrums because she was being controlled in this way that was not the same as the rest of her siblings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So sad. I'm still hung up on having this fucking nurse
hold her in the room for 2 hours. Women just generally, this is why I'm saying the joy of being a woman. Women were so disempowered that they're saying like, Rose never worked for a living.
Yeah.
So she has a woman who's telling her that this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
She didn't feel empowered to say like, hey, like, can you just catch the fucking baby?
Yeah, totally. And it's at a point in history where it's so impersonal. We don't have midwives anymore.
Exactly. So the family, they consulted with doctors and various, mostly doctors, but they just got a lot of, diagnoses that by today's standards are really offensive. So just as a warning to everyone, I'm going to be using the term mentally retarded just because that was a clinical term that they used back then. And this is a history podcast.
Yeah.
So she was declared mentally retarded. They also referred to her as the victim of a genetic accident or a uterine accident. I'm just like, this was no accident.
No, it was not an accident. And it wasn't genetic.
Thank you. I'm going to be getting into this at the end, but the Kennedy family protected itself.
Yeah, of course.
They lied about a lot of things.
Oh, I'm sure that this happened in a lot of wealthy families.
Yes.
I'm sure this happened all the time.
All the time. At age 9, Rosemary was tested to gauge her like intellectual abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole situation it's so fucked up. But the issue was made even more severe because her older two brothers were so high performing. They had high IQs.
Yeah.
And I mean, they had all of the wealth and influence. They had all the private tutors. Like,
sure.
They excelled and she didn't.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So when she was.
Sorry, so sad.
I know. So at 9, she was tested and she was able to compute, like, this was part of the testing, 428 times 32 and get the correct answer at age 9.
Okay.
Yeah, so her IQ was well above 75. 75 is usually between 70 and 75 is the cutoff for MR. She was well above that for a child. It's hard to know, but clinicians speculate that she was probably around 80 IQ And IQ is very problematic, but the average IQ is 98.
Okay.
So she would be in the low average range, like on the borderline of MR.
Okay.
So she was a person with a mild intellectual disability.
Sure.
And because of this, her mother never let her leave the house alone. Ugh.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, I know it was 100 years ago and like people didn't know how to deal with that at that time. And if you are a wealthy family, you don't want people, you don't want your dirty little secret to get out.
So Rosemary, she ran away a lot. She felt trapped.
I would too.
Right? I would do the same. And disability was so shameful in the 1920s. There was a lot of misinformation. There was a lot of stigma. Have you heard of ugly laws?
No.
So this is something that I heard about in passing, listening to the Daily Zeitgeist podcast. And when I heard the term ugly law, I had a little teehee. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Because I thought shit was funny because, you know, I'm black and my mom, I don't know if this is a saying amongst like non-black families, but God don't like ugly.
I know.
You've never heard of God don't like
ugly? I've heard that, but okay. It's not something
my mom would say it all the time when people wronged her and they were ugly.
Okay.
So when I heard ugly laws, I thought it was so funny until I looked into it.
But also, didn't God make those people ugly?
My mom doesn't care about that, you know? Okay. She's feeling aggrieved.
It's a genetic genetic accident.
Oh, how dare you make this sad? No,
sorry.
No, that's appropriate. In 1867 through 1974, cities enacted these so-called ugly laws, banning people from public spaces who were diseased. This is a quote from Wikipedia. People who were diseased, maimed, mutilated, or in any way deformed so as to be an unsightly or disgusting object.
Oh my God. So you were not allowed to be in public if you were too ugly to look at.
Yes. But they would go even further. They would criminalize certain actions. You weren't allowed certain movements. Limping or having seizures. You could be fined.
It was illegal.
You could be fined. So I'm going, I think your response is telling me that I need to do a mini-sode about this.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of information about ugly laws and how they were enacted in different places. And again, the last one, it went off the books in 1974 in Chicago, recent times.
1974.
I don't think there were any ugly laws in Boston, but it was the 1920s. This was the era of... This is when eugenics was even more popular than it is today. This is the era of Buck v. Bell. Yes. This is when they're telling people, they were sterilizing people who the state deemed defective.
Yeah, yeah.
Feeble-minded.
I could get into eugenics right now, but like the whole thing with Lindbergh
yes.
baby. There was all this speculation that he had the baby disappeared because the baby was sickly. And he was supposed to be this
so strong,
like specimen, like superior specimen. And he didn't want people to think that his genetic line could produce an inferior child.
Yeah.
So there's all this speculation that like the baby wasn't kidnapped. He had it. It was by design.
So is there evidence for that, though?
Yes.
So the 1920s was a fucked up time. But to make matters even worse, the Kennedys were extremely devout Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And their God told them that
the Lord
told them that disability was the result of sin.
Oh, of
that
course.
It was twas a punishment from God.
So from it was from Joe's God. Fault.
Yes.
Yeah.
For all of his sin.
Uh-huh.
Sending Rosemary away to an institution, the family thought that would be too extreme, which it would be too extreme. There would be no reason to do anything like that.
Yeah.
Mental asylums were terrible in the 20s, and no absolutely. Amount of money could buy better treatment. Abuses of all sort were rampant in these facilities, the worst of which involved medical experimentation, which is so common in the 20s.
Of course.
Again, it's the age of eugenics, so they're just trying out a whole bunch of shit. And we like to think as Americans, like, oh, you know, Hitler did all these experiments in the 40s, it's like we did them in the 20s.
Yeah.
on people who are institutionalized. We did them 2 decades prior.
We gave him the idea.
We gave him the idea. Yeah. So they would never send her to a place like that.
I guess if nothing else, that's a positive thing because like her life would have been ruined.
These institutions, like they didn't consent. Like, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it bigger than a bread box? there was no such thing as consent.
Yeah.
So the fact that they didn't send her away is huge. But her disability was increasingly a challenge for her mother because, again, she had so many children at home and she didn't have the space to dedicate to give Rosemary all the attention that she really needed.
Mm-hmm.
So at age 11, Rosemary was sent to boarding school.
It's better than an institution, for sure.
Way better than an institution. And over the next 9 years, she would be sent to 5 different schools. Because she was having trouble, so they kept, moving her around.
Sending her out. Yeah, okay.
Which is fine. You know, when she was 15, she was sent to Sacred Heart Convent in Rhode Island. It was a school. Your face is hilarious.
not a convent. No.
It's like someone burnt you with a hot coal. You're just like.
Yeah. Ooh.
At this time, the convent taught young women.
Okay.
They weren't just teaching them to become nuns. Okay. It was a school.
I wasn't raised Catholic, so the idea of a nun teaching scares me.
Yeah, not all Catholic nuns are the same, but the most of them are the worst. I only had one nun in my whole schooling career. Even though I went to Catholic school my whole life, it was only kindergarten that we had a nun, and then they got rid of her because she was really, really nasty.
Sure, okay.
It was the 90s, so she used to hit kids.
That's what I think of is nuns hitting people with rulers.
Yeah. She's in this convent. She knows how to read and write. She knows how to commute. She knows math, but she's still not performing as the other children are. She wrote home a lot and she didn't have the best handwriting. She wrote in a very childish script when she was still 15. She would kind of write at an angle and sometimes it'd be off the page.
Okay.
She made spelling errors and sometimes she didn't finish her sentences. And I'm like, she sounds like me via text.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You could always understand what she was saying. She was so sweet. You could just tell from her writing that she just wanted her parents' approval.
Yeah.
And she felt like she wasn't, she wasn't really getting it.
Uh-huh.
In 1938, Joe Sr. was named the ambassador to the court of St. James in Britain.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. It's rich people shit. But they moved across the pond. This put the Kennedy family in an international spotlight.
Ooh la la. They were using a mid-Atlantic accent.
They were. The British press loved this family.
Okay.
Because here were all these toothy children and two powerful parents and everyone is gorgeous.
Yeah.
They were obsessed. And 2 weeks after their arrival in England, Rosemary and her younger sister, Kathleen, were presented at court, which is a tradition for every rich, single woman of the day that you would be presented in as an eligible, lady of the court. And her pictures are just so stunning.
Oh.
She has this radiant smile. She looks so happy with her mom and her sister. And the British loved her sense of style. They just thought she was so warm and lovely. And her parents were determined to keep this, what they thought was such a shameful secret from the press. They made sure that Rosemary was treated like every other eligible bacheloress. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bachelorette. Her family enrolled her at a boarding school that was run by nuns. It was called Belmont House.
Okay.
But these nuns, they embraced the Montessori school of thought, which is incredible.
In what would this be, the 30s?
This is 38. Point? Do you know about the Montessori school?
I know of Montessori schools.
Yeah. My niece and nephew went to Montessori schools. It's just a different way of teaching. It's it's such a good way of teaching kids. It's very hands-on. It's very individual. It's not just everyone sitting in a class doing the same thing.
Standardized testing and yeah.
Yeah, it's nothing like that. It focused on learning through practical skills and like hands-on activities. Mm-hmm. It's why my niece is able to not kill spiders, like hold a spider and be okay with it. Because she was like outside and they like learn how to garden. And it wasn't about like learning to do, because it's like, they're five.
Yeah.
But like this was Montessori school for people of all ages.
Okay.
So she was, I think she was 20 at the time.
Oh, okay.
19 or 20.
Either way, a little bit old to be in school.
Yes. But because of that, she was being taught to be a teacher's aide because she was so good with the children.
Of course she was.
She was so sweet and so patient with kids. Oh my God,
what a perfect role for her to be
She did so well under their guidance. And it's just, it's such a shame because the Germans marched on Paris in 1940, and after that, the family moved back to the States.
Oh.
So Rosemary's break was over, and her, you know, her good times had come to an end. So I think this is, speaking of break, I think this is a good time to take a little break.
Okay. Yeah, my drink's about empty.
Yeah, I'm going to slurp mine up.
It's too good.
Yeah, it is really, really, really tasty.
BRB.
Well, hello there. Do you wish your high school history course had more drinking, more swearing, and more ladies?
Well, do we have the show for you. Her Story on the Rocks is a long-form podcast talking about good women, bad women, fictional women, and non-fictional women from all times and places. Basically, each week we pair two women who we research with a themed signature cocktail. You won't be sorry you listened to our latest episode.
Available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cheers!
We're back.
We're back with more of these really tasty-ass cocktails.
Oh my God.
I need to get new coasters. They keep sticking to the glasses and falling.
So back to Rosemary. When she was back at home because Hitler was doing his thing in Europe. The family came back. She had to follow her parents, her mother's very strict rules. That again prevented her from going outside alone.
Mm-hmm.
She had become increasingly assertive post trip abroad.
Sure,
She came back with bad bitch energy and like,
she's a young woman.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. At this point, I think she is 21 years old.
Of course, she's becoming assertive.
Meanwhile, she's watching her siblings start their lives, start their careers, start to have families, and she was at home with her mother.
Fuck that.
She was eventually sent back to the convent. According to the nuns, she would have these sporadic outbursts and would sneak out at night and go to bars.
I would be doing exactly that.
According to the nuns, she was sneaking out to have sex with men at bars. And it's like, bitch, were you there? She's a young, rich woman.
I was doing exactly that at 21. Sneaking out to have sex with men.
These nuns didn't want her to be great, y'all, okay? They didn't want her to be great. Joe Sr. decides that he's going to be a parent now.
Oh, now? What a great time.
Yeah. So he was...
Sounds like my dad.
He was worried that if unchecked, Rosemary would create a bad reputation for the family.
Oh, fuck off.
At a critical time. He was busy plotting his son's political careers. His two eldest sons, Joe and Jack... He wanted to avoid scandal at all costs. He was looking for an easy fix for Rosemary's age-appropriate sexual behavior. And he found this fix in two doctors.
Oh, no.
Dr. Walter Freeman, along with his associate, Dr. James Watts, had been researching a neurological procedure that was said to cure mental illness. Do you know what this procedure was?
Oh, no. Did they lobotomize her?
They sure did. The lobotomy. Oh, at this time, it was so experimental. There had only been like a handful of cases in this country. Freeman believed that mental illness was related to overactive emotions and that by cutting the brain in this way, he could cut away these feelings.
Holy fucking shit. I'm... going to cry.
When the lobotomy was first introduced, it was hailed as this cure-all and was widely recommended by physicians, especially for their female patients.
Uh-huh.
Newspapers described it as easier than curing a toothache.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Despite the excitement, there were many warning signs that the lobotomy, although I guess occasionally effective, was destructive.
It was only effective for people who were really, really violent and destructive to quiet them.
Or really, really suicidal,
yeah,
to quiet them. And I took this out of my outline because I am fascinated by neurology and like neurobehavior and like biopsychology. All of that shit is so interesting to me. The reason we have a lobotomy at all was based on one chimpanzee in a lab setting.
Oh my God.
Who was getting really upset when he was doing these food-related tasks. When he couldn't perform a food-related task, he would get really kind of violent. Chimps are fucking strong.
Yeah.
So they just started cutting holes in his brain, and then he became really docile when he fucked up. Because of this one chimpanzee in this one setting, Dr. Freeman decided that, oh, we should do this for humans. For women. So despite the warnings, because Joe Sr., he did talk to people and they're just like, I don't know, it seems really experimental and there's like really bad results. He's like, I got this. He needed no convincing. It's unclear if it was out of desperation for just having a daughter that was struggling and just wanting to help her.
He didn't want to help.
Yeah.
He wanted to shut her up. He wanted her to stop being promiscuous. Yeah.
I think it was mostly determination. He's like, I need to get this done, and then I need to get my sons in their positions of power. That's what I think, but the internet is mixed, and a lot of people have a lot of sympathy for Joe. He didn't know.
Oh, fuck that.
He didn't know.
He sacrificed his daughter for the political careers of his sons.
Sure did. So years later, this is where things start to... I mean, all of this is fucked up, which is to come. Years later, Rose would claim that she had no idea about this procedure and that Joe Sr. made the decision alone, which seems very unlikely because she was all the way up Rosemary's ass.
I mean, I guess it's possible for him to just be like, we're going to the doctor.
That's true. But it just...
And then she came back a completely different person.
But like, she seems like someone who was very like, oh, what's happening? What's going on? Okay. Where is she? Joe Sr. was having all the fucking affairs
with
all the young women. And because of this, Rose was medicating herself with a lot of like really strong psychopharmaceuticals.
Okay.
She was kind of zonked out of her fucking mind sometimes. Because she was so Catholic, her father, she went to her father and was like, he's cheating on me. And her father's kind of like, so what?
Take a pill. Shut up.
Yeah.
That's what men do.
He has money.
He has money.
What are you doing?
Shut your mouth.
You're not working.
Oh my God. This story is making me so sad and so mad at the exact same time.
Yeah. Welcome to the party of being a woman.
What the fuck?
It's a woman. I think you need to tell that story to like just lighten the mood.
Okay. Yes. We do need a mood lightener. So we were upstate staying in a cabin last summer and we were talking about... I was talking about, you know, the possibility that Russell and I ever might have children, which we're like, it's not going to happen at this point. We've decided we're not into it anymore. But there was a period where we thought maybe we might want to. And I was saying that we had thought of baby names. And I said, you know, if it's a boy, we would name it this. But if it's a woman... I would name it something else.
And everyone was just like, wait, what? If it's a woman? The birth party would be just like like pocketbooks.
Yes.
Old lady things.
Yeah.
Because it's a woman. Amazing.
If it's a boy, if it's a woman.
I love it because it's just, it's a little too real, but I love it.
She should never have been.
She should have never been a candidate for this. It made no sense, but... It really makes you think about all the other women who are in this situation for no reason, just to kind of control them. Wow. So we don't know if Rosemary herself was told about this procedure. She was the daughter who just wanted to make her parents happy. Like, had she been told, like, hey, we think you need to get this, I think she'd be like, okay, cool. Like, she wouldn't be...
This is what my parents want for me. I'm just trying to please them.
I'm just trying to be a good daughter. So in 1941, when Rosemary was only 23 years old, She was admitted to George Washington University Hospital in D.C. There, she was strapped to a table and given anesthetic to numb the areas of her brain where Freeman and Watts would drill two small holes. They then inserted a small metal, like, spatula-like device and sliced the brain connections between the prefrontal cortex and the rest of her brain. Freeman, he became famous for being the first American to perform a transorbital lobotomy. It was a way for a lobotomy to not just be done in a hospital, but to be done in an office. It was a way for you to go in through the eye. You would pull the eyelid back and insert an ice pick hammered through the eye socket into the prefrontal cortex. And then you would make a windshield wiper motion. When I read that, I'm like, I don't need this detail.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I wish I was fucking kidding
you. So just like, oh my God, I can't. Yeah. I'm so angry and so sad at the same time.
So this Rosemary didn't get a transorbital one.
God.
But Freeman, he would brag that he did 25 women in one day.
He ruined 25 women's lives.
Yeah.
In one day. Good for you. Pat on the back, you piece of shit.
Yeah, you can do this just in your office. So Rosemary, she had a procedure done in the hospital. She was awake during the whole procedure, which is very common for neurological procedures. They have to keep you awake. So the doctors had her recite poems as they cut away her brain. When she was silent, they knew that the procedure was complete.
You can't.
We've done.
We're done.
This woman is quiet. Mission accomplished. We got this. The hope was that the procedure would stop her on this trajectory from becoming like a woman of ill repute, like a Stephanie sort of character. Yeah.
Who doesn't love a woman of the night?
Yes. Who of the night? That is very sexful.
Who doesn't love a woman of ill repute? I don't want a woman of good repute.
Yeah, a woman of the daytime? Ew. She's probably wearing khakis.
A woman of the afternoon.
Ew, gross.
Sounds like Karen to me.
Yeah, you read my mind. Yeah, so the results were severe. After the lobotomy, Rosemary was no longer able to walk or talk.
Oh.
Joe Sr. moved Rosemary to a facility in Beacon, New York, upstate. You're familiar with Beacon. Yeah. It was the most expensive psychiatric care facility in the country at the time. It was called Craig House. F. Scott Fitzgerald's wife was there on occasion. Henry Fonda's wife was there and actually committed suicide there. It took months of therapy before Rosemary regained the ability to move on her own. And in the end, she would only gain partial use of one hand.
Oh my fucking God.
So one of her legs was forever turned inward, and she lost the ability, the control of her bladder and other bodily functions. Months after this surgery, when she regained the ability to speak, it was a mix of garbled sounds and words. She had become an infant again in a lot of ways. She could have had a great life.
A great life.
Yeah.
She literally could have been a mother. She could have had children. She could have married.
Oh,
she could have been a teacher.
All of those things. Yes. She could have had all of those
there
things.
There was no reason for her not to have any of that.
And it's like I took this out of my outline, but her developmental disability was so slight that she was like the family took her everywhere. She was horseback riding. She went sailing. She did all the things. She just wasn't as fast as the other kids. There was no reason for any of this.
I cannot believe how much you have found in your research sympathetic to Joe Kennedy. He literally destroyed her the altar of the Kennedy legacy.
Most of what I found in even just other podcasts that I listened to, so sympathetic. So in 1949...
I want to fucking drive an ice pick down his eye hole.
Same. In 1949, she was transferred to a facility in Wisconsin called St. Coletta's. It was a residential care facility, and it was set up like a campus. It was really, really beautiful. She had a private house. She had a dog. She had two nurses that were, I think they live with her, but she had 24-hour care in her little house. There was also a woman who came and did art therapy with her that taught her how to do pottery. But oftentimes she just stared at the walls for hours.
I mean, that all sounds lovely, but I wonder how much she remembered from her former life when she used to be able to walk and speak.
When she had the surgery in D.C. and it went fucking wrong, her dad came and brought her to Beacon, New York. Mm-hmm. But when she was moved from Beacon, New York, like, he just had other people move her.
Of course, because he doesn't want to see what he has done.
Correct.
To his own daughter.
So for 20 years, Rosemary did not see anyone from her family. Actually, 21 years. The family, when asked, they said that they had no idea where Rosemary was.
How?
Rose
how
included.
Do you not know where she is?
They knew where she was.
Fuck you.
Her brother Jack, you know, JFK, was a rising political star. Her absence was chalked up to her being shy. She was just reclusive. She didn't like the spotlight. She's anxious. There was even a rumor that she was a teacher for disabled children. And it's like she could have fucking been, but she wasn't.
She should have been.
Yeah.
She would have been.
She was. She was training for that. Her father did, however, send a letter to St. Coletta's in 1958 saying that he was grateful to them for caring for Rosemary and allowing the rest of the family to, quote, go about their life's work.
Oh, my God.
Go about their life's work. It wasn't until after Joe Sr. had a massive stroke in 1961 that Rose went to see Rosemary. It's worth noting that 1961 was the year that JFK was inaugurated.
Uh-huh.
And let's say that's a coincidence. Mission accomplished, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so funny. All the articles I read were just so like, oh, you know, they did their best. And like,
they did their worst.
So in 1962, Rose, so this is the year later. So it's been 21 years since she saw her daughter. In 1962, Rose traveled to Wisconsin to see her eldest daughter, the one she had not seen since her surgery in 1941. Mm-hmm. When Rosemary saw her mother, she attacked her. Which is exactly what should have happened. She understood the assignment. She got what she needed to do. Mm-hmm. I would be angry, too, if my family pretended they lost my number for 21 years, and yet were paying for my...
After destroying me.
Yeah. They did pay for her care, but they... Yeah,
that's the
I know,
least
that's,
you could
especially
do.
As a fucking Kennedy. Come on now. All this so Jack could become president.
This all could have happened whether she had sex or not. She wouldn't have been running away from the fucking convent to have sex if she was at home just living her life.
Like
the
rest
place.
Of her siblings.
If she was raised as a regular ass fucking rich ass white girl.
Yeah. If she could have suitors like the rest of them and just like go out and see them.
Nobody would have
without your mother
nobody
hovering.
Would have given a shit if the girl was a little stupid. But
she doesn't need to do math.
She had money. She was pretty.
Beautiful, actually. Stunning.
Plenty of men would have married her and let her go on to be a teacher.
They're just like,
or whatever.
Wait, I get how much money?
Exactly. And I get to have sex with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
facts. Yeah.
To put
I
it
know.
In the terms of a straight white man, like, yes, please.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. She's
a hot, dumb girl who likes to have sex.
Yeah. Because she's a young woman in her prime. The nerve of her. So I'm glad that it's so funny. All these articles I read were just like, oh, she didn't know what she was doing. And I'm like, I think she knew exactly what she was doing.
She was rebelling.
Yeah.
As
and it's like, if I was that, if that was me, like, my mom could catch these hands as well.
No, and
because fuck off.
Because
you haven't seen me in 21 years.
Yeah, exactly.
21 years.
When she was having sex, she was also rebelling at a point where, because she was a little bit behind developmentally, if she was 21 when this was happening, developmentally, she was probably like 17, 18,
yeah.
Which is when you fucking rebel.
Exactly. She was hitting all the milestones just a little bit later.
Oh my God.
So now that Jack was in office, the family could acknowledge Rosemary's existence. It was almost like a light switch had been flipped. And all of a sudden, everyone was championing the rights of disabled people. But in truth, the family had been quietly pushing the cause. So Joe Sr., he founded an organization called Joseph P. Kennedy Jr. Foundation. He founded this in 1946. So 5 years after he allowed surgeons to ruin his daughter's brain. The goal of the charity was to, quote, better the lives of the retarded and their families, and to identify causes of MR.
It's so upsetting, the story.
Yeah.
She was just a little bit behind.
Just a little bit too.
After being held in the womb for two hours.
Like, you would think
that. It could have been so much worse. Oh,
Tux, it could have been so much worse. She could have never had the ability to, like, control her bowels. And yet she was able to go sailing. And she was able to ride horsebacks. Like, she was able to ride horsebacks. Well,
I'm riding the back of a horse.
She was able to go horseback riding. I'm not a rich person, okay?
Multiple backs of multiple horses.
She was that talented, okay? Yes. She was that talented. Where was I? Cut out a brain. Yes. Okay, so... I'm sorry. Oh, help me. I'm sorry. I'm a bad person. So the goal of this, like, charity that Joseph Sr. set up, you know, I said it was to benefit people who had MR and their families, and just to identify the causes, which feels a little eugenicsy, but it was the first MPO of its kind. And in that way, it was a good thing. Meanwhile, this whole charity that is set up for essentially the victims, I don't like that word, but like, of MR, never once mentioned his daughter's name.
Of course not.
It was named after his eldest son who was killed in World War II.
That is bullshit.
Thank you. Thank you for just validating how I feel. Because when I was researching this, everything I read was just so like, yay, they created awareness.
You did this with your wealth to assuage your own guilt and couldn't even be bothered to name it after her. And the fact that you read
every
sympathetic tales.
I mean, only sympathetic tales.
Oh my God.
It was so my disgusted. Own interpretation that I'm just like, wait, but what? It's the fact that he's Kennedy and like people fucking love the Kennedys. I think that's all it is.
I mean, I like the Kennedys. I mean, a lot of articles say
that, like, oh, he didn't know the results.
He was lied to by medical professionals.
Yeah, but the fact that the lobotomy was so new, it was so experimental, there was no reason. If you cared about your whoever in your family, you wouldn't do something that was this experimental unless you were desperate, and there was no reason to be desperate.
Yeah.
Unless you were concerned about your son's political careers. There was no impetus to do it now.
Yeah.
Eunice Kennedy Shriver, she would eventually run this foundation that her father started, the Joseph P. Kennedy Jr. Foundation. On September 22nd, 1962, so this is the year that Rose went to see her daughter and got her hands.
Uh-huh.
She got those hands, rightfully so. That same year, Eunice wrote a piece for the Saturday Evening Post. It was called Hope for Retarded Children, and it would be the first time Rosemary's diagnosis would be talked about in the press. It was an important piece despite all of the fucking lies.
I was just about to say, for lack of a better word, she was not retarded.
But it made the plight of the disabled visible. In the article, she omits a ton of detail. She left out the part about Rosemary being sent away to boarding school. After boarding school, there was, of course, nothing about the lobotomy that her father said to do, or how the family didn't see her for 21 years. Nothing about that. Despite the omissions, the impact of the article was normalizing the existence of disabled, like this stigmatized group of children, disabled children.
Which is a net gain, for sure.
Huge. And the Kennedy name saying that, like, hey, there's someone in my family who is MR, but also really not. But, like, there was someone in my family who was a disabled person, and, like, she is a person.
Yeah.
That is something.
Yeah, absolutely.
They didn't need to do that, but they did that. It took them until JFK was in office to do it. But it's like, I am all about, and this is like, seriously, no shade, better late than never.
Yeah.
You could have been better, but you weren't, but you got there. So later that year, JFK, he signed the first piece of legislation that addressed mental illness, like in print. It was the precursor to the Americans with Disability Act.
Okay.
Eunice would found the Special Olympics in 1968. Her son, Anthony Shriver, would become, like his mother, a disability activist, and he founded another nonprofit called Best Buddies International. Rosemary's baby brother, Ted, the murderer, he also sat on the board of the American Association of People with Disabilities. It became the family business. Which is like,
I mean, fuck all of y'all, but like, okay.
I am fully down with doing the right things for the wrong reason. As fucked up as what they did was, it was really powerful that they used the family's image, their prestige, the fucking name.
Yeah.
To advance the cause of disability rights.
Yeah, of course.
You know, by any means necessary. The fact that we had a sitting president in the early 60s saying that disabled people are people,
sure,
and fully deserving of the same rights and protections of the state as everyone else. That shit was revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really fucked up what happened to Rosemary, because there was no reason for any of it.
Yeah.
Any of it.
Not
she
at
shouldn't
all.
Have been lobotomized. She could have, like you said, lived a perfectly normal life. She could have married. She could have worked. She could have had a beautiful life as a rich woman in like New England. She could have done so many things, and she was deprived of that because her dad wanted her brother to become president. But because of her sacrifice, disability rights were pushed forward at a national level at a time that was really, really early compared to other parts of the world.
Yeah.
I just feel like her story is such a sad one, but it's one that needs to be taught in schools because she made history whether she was aware of it or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
She changed our world for the better. And her story is important because disabled people are failed every single day of their lives in this system. We all live in a pretty ableist society, and we must do the work to normalize disability in our minds and our policies and our fucking families. If you have kids, don't have them out here acting ridiculous. Disabled people aren't here as like Google search engines to answer your questions. Like, they are not here to fucking inspire you. Educate yourselves, educate your children, you know, the end.
What a story. Holy shit. That was literally.
Ooh, literally.
Literally an emotional roller coaster.
It was, yeah.
Holy shit.
It was a lot to research, but
I can't.
I think it's a really good story.
Absolutely.
And I think people need to talk about it more.
Yeah. Well, my drink is certainly empty.
Yeah. My drink is not, but.
Damn.
I was on my soapbox doing my thing.
I think we're done.
I feel really, really validated, though, because I'm over here thinking like I just have just no empathy for rich white men. But then here you are being like, fuck him. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah. No.
And this is why we're friends.
Fuck him. America's history is juicy. We just add rye whiskey and a bunch of fruit juice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Lurzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. He's our rock.
He is.
Solid as a rock.
I like that I was thinking of like Peter in the Bible, like the rock that I built my church upon. I went to Catholic school, therefore I was brainwashed.
We Lutherans don't talk about that person. Never heard of him. Okay, bye.
Bye. It was Paul, maybe.
Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note that we are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. A full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. And remember that written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and make sure you follow us on Instagram, because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves, and we have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.